continuing in mitzvah reish lamed lo na'acher schar sachir, not to delay the payment of wages to a laborer, or of whatever purpose you might be hiring someone and might be required to pay wages. Midine ha-mitzvah, so we went before that the reasoning for the mitzvah, just to remind ourselves, is that as part of making sure society is well run and people aren't doing bad things to each other, and also since this is what the laborer relies on to feed himself, feed his family, so therefore it's very cruel to delay this. We pointed out also that the pasuk says they love who knows as nafsho, that he is really looking forward to this. So the Chazal bring another drasha, an additional level of interpretation of this statement, that who knows as nafsho, meaning that literally he puts his life on the line, as nafsho, his soul. He puts his soul on the line to do the tasks for the Baal Habayis. So if he says, I want you to repair my roof, okay, so he's gonna stand on the roof the whole day and try to repair it, but he might fall off. He goes up in a tree, and he might fall and, you know, hang himself on the tree, so that's no good. So therefore, since he's put his life on the line for the Baal Habayis, it's only fair for the Baal Habayis, the person who hired this laborer, to pay the wage on time. It's the least he can do after this life-threatening experience, at least in some cases. Midine ha-mitzvah. What are the halachos of this mitzvah? Masha amru zichronam levracha, she'echad schar ha'adam v'ha-behema v'ha-kelim. You might think that this only applies if you actually hire a person's services to do work for you personally, and that you have to pay the person's wages. But that's not true. Even if you rent out an animal or kalim from someone else, so you have to have a vessel to use for whatever purpose, a tractor, you hire rent a car, whatever. So when you finish with the tractor or the animal to plow with, whatever it is, you have to pay the person the wages on time. They're both a positive commandment, which is found in Parshas, in Sefer Dvarim, and over here, which is found in Parshas Kedoshim, Baal Tolim, that you're not allowed to leave it overnight. So basically, if you hire someone to work for you the entire day, then they have the entire following night to collect the wages. And if you hire someone to work for you during the whole night, so then they have the entire day afterwards to collect the wages from you. But if you hire someone for only a couple of hours during the day, then they have the entire rest of the day to collect from you. And if you hire someone only for a little bit of time during the night, then they have the entire night to collect for you. So now, I think Mrs. Hurst was asking about this last time. So what happens if it's more than a day? What, a lot of times you hire laborers to work for you for more than the time period of one day. Schir Chodesh, what about a monthly laborer? Or Schir Shabbos, a weekly laborer. Not that he's working on Shabbos, but Shabbos means a week time period. It's interesting, it's in the reverse order. Just start with Schir Shabbos, then go to Schir Chodesh. I don't know why you changed the order over here. Schir Shana, somebody who's hired to work with you for a year. Schir Shavua, somebody who's hired to work for you for 7 years. That's why a lot of times in Chazal, a week is called Shabbos. It's also called Shavua sometimes. But Shavua means a lot of times a set of 7 years. So it's confusing. So you know, Shavua could either mean 7 years or it could mean 7 days. That's why a Shabbos is called, meaning a unit of days that leads up to Shabbos, meaning a week.
What kind of work is a Gentile allowed to do for you for Shabbos?
Gentile?
Shabbos, yeah.
We're not talking about, we're just talking about regular laborers. Jews for now. We'll discuss it in a minute. But you mean in general?
Laborers are Jews.
No, I would not. Maybe not anymore. But in the olden days, yeah, well, there were Jewish manual laborers.
Okay, but what about Gentiles? What are you allowed to? Gentile laborer is not allowed to do for you some things that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos. The question.
Laborer is not allowed to do anything for you on Shabbos. Does someone to come to do construction on your house?
No.
No. You're allowed to ask a non-Jew to do certain tasks for you under certain circumstances.
Okay, what are those tasks?
Well, basically, it's the main heter is what's called shvus de shvus b'makom mitzvah. That if you have two rabbinical commandments that are laws that combine together, then if there's a great need or a mitzvah purpose for it, then you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to do it. So in other words, I'm sorry. So one of the rabbinical restrictions is not to ask a non-Jew to ask, do things for you on Shabbos. And the other rabbinical restriction is anything on Shabbos that's prohibited only rabbinically. So if you ask a non-Jew to do something that's prohibited only rabbinically, then that's allowed on Shabbos if there's a great need or a mitzvah need for
but
it.
But that's not for pay. I think
it's not for pay.
No, is the question possibly, are we talking about, is there any distinction between Jewish and non-Jewish laborers in terms of you have to pay them on time?
Was that what you're asking?
No, that's not what you're asking.
But we'll get that in the end of this. That's the basic heter by what you're allowed to ask non-Jews to do on Shabbos. Also during the time period of Bein Hashmoshes, the intermediate period between it's between sunset and when the stars come out. So basically it's about, for about approximately half an hour after what we call sunset.
Uh-huh. And if you ask them to do it before Shabbos?
That's not allowed either. Not to ask them before Shabbos to do something free, unless it will be also to ask it on Shabbos also. I mean, there are lots of different elements about it. What you're allowed, for example, if you want them to, if you're allowed to...
You want to push the button so your dishes get washed. Are you allowed to
You're not allowed to operate a dishwasher on Shabbos in any way because it's called Zilzil Shabbos, that to have a machine going, all the water is spurting and cleaning and on your house. If it's very silent, there's what to discuss. You have to decide whether we're operating a dishwasher is an Isser D'Oraisa or an Isser D'Rabbanan. If you really need the dishes in order to celebrate your next Suda Shabbos, that's the Tzorech Mitzvah. So then that's the situation where a Shavuos to Shavuos would be applicable. You'd be allowed to ask the non-Jew.
You don't wash them by hand. I mean,
Yeah, so it's better to ask the non-Jew to wash it by hand. But there's some reason, only way you can use a dishwasher, and it's really quiet. I would not. Really, should try to avoid that. But if you ask them to wash
my dishwasher is quiet, it's not making a lot of noise. But I'm just curious whether or not that's permissible.
Right, it's worth to discuss. Yeah, depends exactly how quiet it is. It depends if you hold the dishwasher, this is the rice, or this is the rabbanan. It's a whole different. Or you're allowed to suggest to them to do something, even if it's the rice, so that removes an annoyance as opposed to doing something actively beneficial for you. So, say for example, you have a candle in your bedroom and you can't sleep. So extinguishing a candle, as opposed to a regular fluorescent electric light, could potentially encroach on the territory of an Isser D'Oraisa, whether it really is in that situation. If you don't need the charcoal that's created by the candle, as a Shaila, but so you'd still be allowed to say, oh, it's really light in here, I can't sleep, without asking them to do it outright. But nowadays, it would fall into the category of Shavuos to Shavuos, because most lights that we have are not an Isser D'Oraisa to turn off, at least, even if it's an Isser D'Oraisa to turn off. It's a shaila about most of the time we assume that turning off a light nowadays is an Isser D'Rabbanan only, so then if you really can't sleep, then that would be what's called the Shavuos to Shavuos B'Mokom Mitzvah, that if you're not going to be able to enjoy the rest of Shabbos because you're going to be so exhausted, then that's from Tzorech Mitzvah, so therefore you'd be allowed to ask the non-Jew to turn off the light in your bedroom.
If you forgot to put the food on the gas before Shabbos, are you allowed to ask a goy to put it on the gas for you?
What do you mean, you don't even have a blech or anything?
Yeah, with a blech.
So you're not allowed to ask him. That's a good question. The simple understanding, not everybody agrees to this, but that's advanced by the Chazon Ish and others, is that you're not, the Isser of putting something anew on the fire on Shabbos...
What do you mean by anew?
Meaning, if something was on the blech... You mean it's not cooked at all?
Yeah, it's cooked. It just...
You just want to warm it up.
Back on the blech.
So you're not even fully cooked food. You're not allowed to put outright on the fire on Shabbos. If it was on the fire before Shabbos, and the
fire, you mean blech?
Right. Even if it has an appropriate.
We do that with your permission. We take kugels out of the refrigerator on Shabbos for a shul meal, or not kugels. That's a bad example. And put them on the hot tray.
The hot tray is different.
Ah, okay.
The hot tray is different because the hot tray is an object. There are people who are machmir on the hot tray also, but the normal custom in America is to make on the hot tray based on Moshe Feinstein, because he said that if there's a hot tray without any adjustment of the temperature, so it's impossible to cook on that. It doesn't look like it's cooking. There's no concern. There are two concerns that brought by the Rishonim as to what the problem is by putting fully cooked food back on the fire onto the fire on Shabbos, even with a blech. One is, I'm sorry. The two concerns are that one, you might stoke the coals in the fire to make it warmer, to help heat up the food, and the other one, applies to other things too, but the other one is that it looks like you're cooking. Mm-hmm. That it doesn't look good to the observer, it looks like you're cooking on Shabbos.
No observers.
So Moshe Feinstein said that if you have a hot plate with no adjustable thing so that you can't raise and lower the temperature, it's impossible to cook on that, so it doesn't look like it's cooking, and there's absolutely, for the same reason, there's no concern of adjusting the level of the fire because there's no adjustment. So that's why the normal...
That covers the knob.
Covering the knob is a problem because that's still mechzik imavashel. That still looks like it's your cooking because it's an object that theoretically could be used for cooking. That's why it's a problem to use a hot, to put something anew onto a hot plate that's adjustable. Okay. Anyway, but in Eretz Yisrael, some people are more machmir, but in America, the normal custom is that we put stuff even straight out of the refrigerator on a non-adjustable hot plate on Shabbos.
And on the blech?
A blech is a problem, because a blech is basically a way that you adjust a normal cooking device in order to make it permissible to A, leave stuff on there before Shabbos, and allow it to continue cooking through Shabbos, and B, once it's completely finished cooking, they're allowed to take stuff off the blech and then put it back on the blech on Shabbos.
So if it's finished cooking, you're allowed to put it on the blech?
No, the blech also is hotter. You can actually cook on a blech.
Right, you could also cook on a blech. Right. So you could, that's why you're not allowed, according to the vast majority of postkin, there is a minority sheet today, and this is okay, but you're not allowed to put something fresh right out of the refrigerator that onto a blech on Shabbos.
So that's where the people who leave it on for an hour in Shabbos and then take it off to put it on the next morning, that's where they get that
it's
from.
It's going to go bad if you do stuff like that.
On a blech.
You mean that's Rav Soloveitchik's thing, that if it was left on...
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's trying to accommodate this problem, right?
Yeah, he felt that, right, because... It's so complicated. Machlokes we showed him at the beginning of the third parak of Masechet Shabbos, that some say if it was on the blech before Shabbos, and if you took it off afterwards, then you're allowed to put it back on at any other point during Shabbos. It was on the blech at the beginning of Shabbos. Right.
But he's a minority on that?
That's not the normally accepted opinion, yeah. I say if you go to someone's house and they did this, so I still think you're allowed to eat the food, but... But it's not the normally accepted opinion.
Are you
allowed
to tell a goy to put it back?
Ah, so putting it back, the question is, you might say as follows, that you have a blech now on Shabbos, and you're going to put fully cooked food back on the blech. So that, is that an iser deraisa or an iser derabanan? It's only an iser derabanan. The food is not cooking at all, just these rabbinical concerns that it looks like you're cooking, or you might stoke the coals.
But you say it looks like you're cooking if nobody's watching you.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't
matter. It's not Marasayan because nobody's watching you.
No, Marasayan is independent of whether somebody actually is present.
I'd be all by your lonesome.
Yeah. So, where was I? So you're now, so they might think, okay, so that's only a rabbinical restriction. They said, oh, so I want my food to be hot for the Shabbos meal. So I'm going to ask a non-Jew to put the food back on the blech on Shabbos because, it's a straight-up shvus de shvus. That it's a rabbinical restriction. You're asking that non-Jew's rabbinical restriction, two rabbinical restrictions combined together for the Shabbos necessity, so therefore I'm allowed to do that. So the Chaznish says, not so fast. He says that putting food back on the fire is not a personal prohibition of yours. It's a prohibition is that this is not allowed to be done in your house on Shabbos, to your food. What?
Okay.
So therefore, not everybody accepts this, but I think Rav Schechter is very into this, that you're not allowed to have this done in your house on Shabbos. But that's why also that there was also the Shaila about if you're allowed to have your crock pot on a timer. So that crock pot goes off in the middle of Shabbos. And let's say late Friday night, you don't want it on Mamish all night. You want it to go off at midnight, and then you want it to heat the cholent again,
right,
starting at 10 a.m. And it's not going to spoil in that short amount of time, supposedly. So then the question is, so that's according to the Chaz, this approach of the Chaznish, that's not allowed either, because even though it's totally automatic, it's just the timer turning on for you still. It's something that's off. It's food that's now on a heat source that's off. Now it's being re-put on a hot heat source. So that's not, it's not allowed either.
Is there a practical solution to this?
When it comes to bishul, water doesn't apply.
No, it does apply. It very applies.
In other words, there's no...
You can't boil water on Shabbos.
I know, yeah. You
can. No, taking water that is has never been boiled before and heating it up is for sure an Isser Daraisa.
Heating water it's a that machlokas, been,
it's a machlokas, not if it had been boiled before and now has cooled down. So there are Rishonim that hold that that's a new act of Bishul, since the previous act of Bishul of cooking is totally unrecognizable now, as opposed to regular
for liquids.
For liquids, as opposed to other foods, where it, once it's if they have a piece of meat, so once it's cooked, you can tell that it's been cooked. It's now totally different. So now heating that up again is for sure not a new act of Bishul.
And then you're allowed.
Right, if you were to heat it up in a permissible way.
You're allowed to have the timer go off and then go
on. No, because you're not allowed to put, you'd only be allowed to put it on a hot plate. You wouldn't be allowed to put it on straight on the blech, or you're allowed to be put it on a pot of food that's heating up on top of a heat source of some kind. So that's in those types of situations, then it doesn't look at all like cooking. You're not going to stoke the coals, etc. So what happens if he's working for you for a week, a month, a year, 7 years, yotza b'yom goves charo kol ayom, that you go by the time where he finishes his work. Finishes work during the daytime, you have to pay him during the daytime, yotza b'alayla goves charo kol alayla, and you have to, if he finishes at night, then you pay the whole night. V'din nosan taliso le'uman, so let's say you give your cloak to a person, a tailor, to fix. Gemara v'hodio, then he says, he calls you up and he says, your cloak is ready to be picked up. Shekolzman shatalis biyad umen eino over. That even though he told you he's done with his work, nevertheless, you don't violate this prohibition as long as you haven't yet picked up the object that he's been working on. Nisana lo velo pro biyom shenisana lo over. And then you might think, wait, maybe you don't violate this ever for something like this because it's not a daily wage. It's you gave it to him and you said, whenever you finish this, you know, let me know and I'll come pick it up. You didn't give him a specific time. You didn't hire him for a time period. No. Shekablonus kischiros. That with a salaried worker is the same as a wage worker for these purposes, that you have to, whenever he finishes the work and you pick up the object, it can't just be like, oh, you call him up. Oh, I finished your working on your cloak. Well, you know, I'm in California now. I can't come pick up my cloak now. That's unreasonable. You have to, you say, whenever you go pick up the cloak, that's when you have to pay right away.
With this question here, though, of being done on a certain object, which you have to pick up, what if it's there, you say, okay, I'm going to pay you, say, you know, $50 to dig this ditch, and he digs the ditch, whatever, how long it takes him, from the time he's done digging the ditch, there's nothing to be picked up, then at that point?
Then, once he comes to demand the payment, he has to pay, right. Mm-hmm. Nothing that has to be, as long as that applies.
As opposed to,
So there are certain times in halacha where kablonos, a salaried laborer, has a different status from a wage laborer, but this is not one of them. The Shabbos is one of them, by the way, that if you're allowed to have, if a non-Jew is working for you but kablonos, so you're just saying do this job whenever, and you don't say specifically to work on Shabbos, and he happens to work on Shabbos, then there are certain situations where, this is what I thought you were asking about originally, which is that if it's not in any Jewish area, so in certain under certain situations that is allowed. Chol HaMoed, different halachas about this. Kain Perishu Zichronam Levracha, that's how they explained it in the Gemara in Bava Metzia. V'din Shliach Shesachar Poalim. So let's say you didn't hire the workers yourself, you sent out your butler to go make sure the work gets done on your house. Mi over Mishum Bal Tolin, Hu O Bal Habayis. So it does the... Does the messenger, does the butler violate the prohibition, or does the owner of the house who's actually hiring the workers violate the prohibition? Shakol holich lefi aloshon shamar lapolim. It all depends what the messenger said to the workers that he's hiring. If he said, you know, you're going to be paid, I'm hiring you, and you're going to be paid by Mr. Cohen, who owns this house, and when he finishes the work. So then at that time, neither violate the prohibition of not paying the worker on time. But if he didn't say that, if he didn't make clear to them that the wage is going to be paid by Mr. Cohen, the owner of the house, then the messenger violates it. Because the messenger was the one who was orchestrating everything. He says, I want you to come today. I'm orchestrating all the workers. The Baal HaBayis was not directly involved. Umash Amru, She'ein HaSocher Over Ela Bizman She'tvo HaSocher Velo Nasan Lo. So if he never came to demand his payment, so you don't violate the prohibition. It only the violation only starts when the worker comes and says, okay, I've done my work, and now pay up, it's payday. Avalim lo tvo eino over. Tosefes. This is, I believe, the first time we've seen such a thing in the Sefer HaChinuch, where the copyists of the Sefer HaChinuch admitted to adding something in. They said, this is a Tosefes, that we added this in because the Sefer HaChinuch didn't include this. There's a lot of things he didn't include.
Who are they?
The people, the scribes who copied over the Sefer HaChinuch.
Who were they?
Whoever was... What?
Do we know who they were?
I mean, not necessarily super learned people.
We don't know who wrote it.
Right. Well, I don't know.
Yeah, just whoever happened to be working as a scribe in that time.
Well,
okay. So he adds, he leaves out a lot of statements of halacha, just giving you a taste of everything. But here, they thought it was very important to add, Osha tavo shelo hayelo ma sheyiten lo eino over. So another way that the person who hired the workers would not violate the prohibition is if he simply doesn't have enough to pay. Again, you shouldn't hire workers necessarily if you don't have enough to pay. But let's say they finished the job early, or you were expecting to have a deal which caused you to, which we were expecting more liquid cash, and the deal didn't go through, something like that. You just don't have enough to pay. You don't have to take a loss. In other words, you don't have to...
Posted a check.
That doesn't help you, because the guy has to have the money now.
He needs the money now.
Right, posting a check doesn't help you. And we'll get to checks in a second. But you don't have to, let's say you have an expensive gold watch that you inherited from your grandmother, and you found someone, you can go to a pawn shop and you'd get, they give you $500 for it in order to pay your workers. $500, this watch is worth $6,000. Well, what do you mean, why should I? So no, I'm only willing to give you $500. So you don't have to take such a loss in order to pay the workers on time. It's you have to have a reasonable amount of liquid cash in order to pay the workers on time. But if you have it and you don't give it to them, then that's then you violate it. So you can make an arrangement with a worker that you can say, you know, go to this money changer, and I want him to give you the money, and then I'm going to pay him back later. Or go to a store and go shopping on my grocery tab, and then I'm going to pay the grocery store later. So if that is an acceptable option to the poel, to the worker, then potter hasocher, then you, the bal habayis, the person who hired the worker, is now exempt from violating this. Afal pi shelo pro ha'acher achar kein. Even if the grocery store owner did not hold up to his end of the deal. Once you say he accepted this arrangement of going to the grocery store, I mean, you have to do it in good faith. If you know that you don't have any tab with the grocery store, that's ridiculous. But then you're totally off the hook. Once you do this in good faith, you make this arrangement, and the poel accepts it. And interesting, you see this himchahu. Himcha is a verb meaning to give you over a debt to someone else. And that's why, does anybody know what the official modern Hebrew word for check is? No, that's in a restaurant. I'm talking about a check where you write someone, pay to the order of so-and-so, however much money. Hamcha'a. Hamcha'a is from the same lashon as himcha, because meaning, basically, I'm not paying you directly, I'm telling you to go to my bank, and my bank is going to pay you. So most people say check nowadays in modern Hebrew also, but the official word is hamcha'a.
You said, if it's acceptable to the worker, you say, look, I don't have the cash right now, but I'll make an arrangement, you go to the...
It doesn't. Whether he has the cash or not is irrelevant.
Whatever it is, you go to the grocery store.
Yeah.
And put it on my tab, and then he's getting paid because he's getting his stuff.
Right.
And then you're
now you have a debt to the grocery store.
He goes to the grocery store.
Yeah.
And the grocery store, well, I can't deal with that.
Right. That's exactly the case I was talking about.
I mean, what? How do you?
Well, then he has a right to go back to the Baal HaBayis to say, you know, that dude didn't pay me. I need my money. You're still you're off the hook, not for paying him, but for violating this prohibition of paying him late.
Okay.
No, you're not. You're right.
You're off the hook in the eyes of heaven for having paid him late, but you still owe him the money.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Just want to make
sure. Umash Amru Zichronim Livracha Shehamash Eschar Sachir Ad Achar Zmano. If you pay late. So you might think, after you violated the first day, you already violated the prohibition, so when he comes to you the next day, I want my money, I'm already going to Gehenna for this, so, you know, we'll come back in a couple weeks. I'm going to take my time now. No, that you're not allowed to do. You still have to give it immediately at the time that you're demanded of the money. V'chozman sheyashelo piro no afil achar zman over odalav shel divrei amzichrona levracha. Now you've still violated, I mean, on a deraisa level, presumably you still are obligated in some way to give it to him exactly when he demands it, but the sages formalized it into a formal rabbinical obligation and prohibition to delay further, even if you violated the original deraisa prohibition of delaying even one day. So they based this on a verse in Proverbs in Sefer Mishlei that it says, "Al tomar l'reacha lech vashov." Don't say to your friend, "Go and come back." And I think it's like the verse continues, "And I'll give you tomorrow." Ki machar etein the yeshitach. I believe it's don't call me out. Maybe the article quotes. I think that's the lashon of the verse. Basically, don't tell your friend, "Go back and come. Go and come. Go and come." And I'll give you tomorrow, but you actually have it. So even though it represents the same sentiment as found in the original biblical Chumash prohibition of waiting even one day. There seems to be a moral exhortation of Shlomo HaMelech, even contained in Scripture, that once you have it, you shouldn't delay anymore. V'din haschir, shenishba v'notel kolzman shetov haschar otoksmana. We have an interesting case, which is that let's say you hired the worker with witnesses, so you know it's an established fact that this fellow was in fact working for you. And then he comes to demand his money on the proper day. Again, it has to be on the proper day. And you say, "No, I paid you already," or "I don't have to pay you," or "We had a different agreement," something along those lines. Afilu haya hasachir katan. Oh, sorry, let's just explain this a little more first. So in such a situation, the worker is the one who takes an oath and then gets to collect from the Baal HaBayis. It's an interesting din. As opposed to the defendant taking the Shavua, so the plaintiff actually gets to take the Shavua and take the money.
Normally,
I'm Otsi Mecher Olav Haraya, yeah. But here, it's a special din that Chazal made because they saw that the Torah was very concerned about the worker's feelings over here, that he doesn't want to feel like nervous, like, "Oh, I did this work, how am I going to be able to feed my family tonight?" So in this situation where it wasn't an established fact that you worked for this person, then you get to, you take a shvua that he didn't pay you, and then he has to pay you. V'afilu haya hasachir katan, even if the worker was a minor, gamhu nishba v'notel. Even though a minor is not necessarily considered to be the most responsible person in Judaism, to be able to handle a full biblical oath and then be able to collect money, he's not. Most of the time, you assume he doesn't have the full yishuv hadas, the severity of the realization of the severity of this prohibition, in order to take a shvua and then take money. Nevertheless, in this case, you can, and it's the Ravid actually disagrees with this. The Ravid says this is absurd. This is, you cannot ever have a katan taking a shvua of this for such a thing. And therefore, in this case, the socher, the person who hired the minor to do the work, would then take the vow, and then he would be exempt from paying. So this is the way the Sefer Chinuch presented it as the opinion of the Rambam. And then the Ravid disagrees that a minor cannot take the shvua in this instance. And then the commentators point out, Sekhesev Mishnah on the Rambam points out that this is actually a matter of disagreement about the readings in the Rambam. That according to what he considers the better reading in the Rambam is actually found here in the Frankel edition. What he considers to be the better reading in the Rambam is that it actually is talking about the socher. That if the minor is the one who hired you to do the work, nevertheless, even though the debt is between a katan and an adult person, which normally you wouldn't find a shvua in such a case, that situation, the worker who is an adult can take a shvua even though the debt is owed to a katan. So he says, I think that the reason that they said it this way is because, yeah, that's the way it's found also in the good manuscripts of the Rambam, that it says, so that it says socher, the hirer and not the laborer.
The socher is the one that's the minor.
That's the seems to be the correct gear, so that's what agrees with the Rai. So the Rambam and the Rai that really agree in this situation, that the katan, that the minor, does not take a vow. Beznasnu zichrona livracha tam bezeh. What did Chazal tell us the reason for this is? Lefi shabal habayis tarud b'tholav. That somebody who's in the position of hiring the workers has a lot of stuff going on. maybe he has he's doing a renovation on his house, and he has a painter and the interior designer and the plumber and the electrician and the all the and the his furniture being moved in, and one of them, you know, he thought he paid all of them, but maybe he forgot to pay all of them. So that's what the Chazal determined, that it would be a more reasonable in such a situation that the Baal HaBayis forgot to pay. So therefore, they said, you're not going to take a vow that you forgot to pay, no, that you forgot to pay, and then the other guy is going to go off with nothing, that we're more concerned with the feelings of the laborer, and it's very reasonable that you neglected to pay him, so therefore, he's the one who's going to take the vow, and he's going to collect the money. But yes, sir, Prateha, the rest of the details are found in Mevar Beperk Chi Mimitziah. It's found in the ninth parak of Bava Mitziah.
What other details?
V'noheges b'chol makom v'chol zman, in all places and all times, v'over aleha v'ikev schar sachir, ad achar zman mugbal, if you went over the allotted time, one day or one night, bitel asei v'over alav, so you neglected to perform a positive commandment, and you violated a negative commandment as well. V'ein lokin alav zelefi shenitan lihishavon, that we do not give Malkos for this, because it could be risk is still subject to restitution. You still owe him the money even after you violated the prohibition of not doing it overnight. So the Minchas Chinuch says that maybe the real reason is that it's alav shein bo maisa. Okay. If you don't pay the worker, al derech ha'azhara, so they say, they want to really drill it into your head that that's not acceptable. She'over mishum bal tashok. You're not allowed to, this is part of, remember, there was a prohibition of oshek. You're not allowed to keep someone else's money, even if it was, keep someone else's money by you. Uval tigzol, you're not allowed to use someone else's money without permission. Uval tolin, and not delay the worker. Mishum lo sovo alav ha'shemesh, and because you're not allowed to, that it can't, the sun can't set after the work is done before the payment. So the Chazal are throwing all these prohibitions at you that, even if you're not technically violate them, perhaps, but there's a taste of these prohibitions that are involved in this, in not paying the worker on time. Therefore, just telling you how bad this is. The Amru say Chazal beger toshav sheyishbo mishum biyomo titen scharo. That if you have a ger toshav, which is a non-Jew who accepts upon himself the seven mitzvos b'nei Noach, and we're supposed to treat him as, not as a quasi-Jew per se, but more fitting within Jewish society than somebody doesn't accept the seven mitzvos b'nei Noach, so therefore you are required to pay this person on time, aval ein ovrim bo mishum bal talin, but you don't violate the negative commandment of not delaying the schar, because then it says lo sashokes reyacha, so reyacha doesn't, it says you shouldn't do this to your friend, so friend generally means within the Jewish community and not someone who's outside, even if they're in the best category of non-Jews that could possibly be. So it says above Mitzi explicitly that this what we just said about Ger Toshav. The Chas of Rama Zichron of Bracha Dehu Adin Leven Noach. So the Rambam says that this applies also to a regular non-Jew who observes the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach. Presumably, the Minchas Chinuch expresses the possibility that maybe it's even a non-Jew who worships Avodah Zarah, but that doesn't make sense. He said that he doesn't think that makes sense. And the other commentators don't necessarily agree with this. They say that this isn't found anywhere explicitly, so why would you assume that it applies to a regular non-Jew, even if they observe Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach? So maybe this doesn't apply to non-Jews at all. So nowadays, there is no Ger Toshav. Ger Toshav is only applicable in a time where there's a Yovel. There's no Yovel nowadays, so no Ger Toshav. So this wouldn't apply to non-Jews at all. But according to this, so how could this be? So a lot of the commentators say it can't be. That's just not true. That there is no such din that this is applicable by a regular non-Jew, even if he observes Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach.
Or something. I mean, how do you determine you owe somebody money? You have to first see whether or not he observes.
No, you have to pay him the money. It's just the whole question is whether you have to pay exactly on time.
On time.
That's the question.
Nice.
Whether there's a positive commandment over a negative commandment, there's for sure not. Whether there's a positive commandment to pay on time.
It's definitely theoretical.
Yeah, right. We're talking about technical halachic violations, right? You know, you're not. It's not correct, but maybe the non-Jews are makbid. I'm saying, okay, you have to be toveya beseder, but there's no problem necessarily for a non-Jew. So will it raise eyebrows as Chil Hashem if he says to you at the end of a day's work, you know, I like my money, please, and you say, you know, well, I do you mind if I pay you tomorrow? Can I pay you tomorrow?
Are you okay,
Tosho? Yeah. Oh, by the way, so the also it's a question. So non-Jews are certainly not obligated to do this themselves. It's not part of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. But if you withhold payment from a laborer completely, then that's gezel. That's stealing, and that would fall under the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. Just not delaying payment is not the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. Also, by the way, when we're talking about before a shvua, in order to take the vow, you still have to be within the time frame that the person has to pay you. So if you finish the work at the end of the day, so you have the whole night, or if you're a night worker, you have the whole day, or if you finish in the middle of the day, then you have the whole rest of the day, etc. So either you have to take the shvua during the time period where the person owes you the money, or you have to bring witnesses that you demanded your payment at the correct time. Okay, mitzvah reish lamed aleph, mitzvah 231, shelo lekalel echad mi Yisrael bein ish bein isha, not to curse any Jewish person, whether man or woman. It doesn't say that. It doesn't say afilu isha.
Jewish person.
It says either man or woman. Why it needs to say that is an interesting question, but it does not phrase it the way you just said it. Shelo lekalel echad mi Yisrael bein ish bein isha. It doesn't refer to just cursing someone in person and making them feel bad, even when you're totally not even in their presence. If you're just mutter Lashon Hara under your breath, it might be bad mitos, but that's not technically Lashon Hara.
Right.
But saying so-and-so is a jerk, whatever, is not a klola. A klola means that you wish ill upon the person.
Yeah. Oh.
As long as you said it, right?
Right. I just want to get that straight.
Thinking it's fine, but
not so fine.
I wouldn't
say fine. You should try not to think that. Shenemar, you should not curse a deaf person.
What does it mean? Cursing a deaf person.
Mi sheinu shomea kila loscha. It doesn't mean that it's limited to someone who's actually deaf. It means someone who cannot hear you. Because they're far away, right. That's what Unklos says as well.
Doesn't the Rambam say that anything that you violate with your mind is worse than anything you violate
with
your mouth?
Ooh, boy, that sounds so Christian. Ooh, I can't.
That doesn't sound right.
No, there's no mice.
Yeah.
Or with your brain?
No. Well, the Rambam takes intellectual violations very seriously. So the Rambam's whole concept of Judaism
even if
is means
you have that curse in mind, according to him.
No, you don't violate the prohibition. No. He's talking about philosophical truths that you have to accept in your mind. He doesn't. Beloshon Sifra, what does the halachic medrash on Sefer Vayikra say? Ein li ale cheresh. Maybe I only talking about a deaf person. Minayin l'rabos kol adam. How do you know that anybody you're not allowed to curse? Tamalomar be'amcha lo sa'or. It says in Shemos, remember it says, v'nasi be'amcha lo sa'or. So it says you should not, a leader in your people, you shouldn't curse. So he says, no, but since it says, in your people, you shouldn't curse, so then it applies to everyone. Imkein lama nemar cheresh. Why does it say a deaf person? Ma cheresh meyuchad shubachayim. A deaf person is alive, because dead people are all deaf, they can't hear. So this violation does not apply to dead people. If you wish ill upon a dead person, okay, not dead.
Not drop dead?
I can't hear you.
Not,
you should burn in hell eternally. No.
Right.
Listen, those people who ran the Inquisition, I curse them. They should burn in hell eternally.
Well, that's allowed, but okay. That's allowed. Anyway, but the Afal pi she'ein banu koach ladas be'ez inyan tanuach haklola b'makulol ve'ez koach b'dibor. So you don't know which curses are going to take effect and which curses are not going to take effect. So we don't know which curses are going to take effect. That people are superstitious and they're nervous about being cursed, even though it might well not take effect.
Even if they don't hear it.
Yeah. Whether Jewish or not Jewish. V'yomru shekilas b'nei adam gam kilas hedyo ta'ase roshem b'makulal. They even if a regular person not a you know some ascetic, pious person who you know might have a stronger spiritual connection, whatever it is. Even a regular person, a hedyot, is obviously cognate with the English from the Greek of idiot, but doesn't have the meaning of idiot in Hebrew. It just means a regular person as opposed to someone special. So people, the normal attitude is that people are nervous about being cursed, period. So they don't know. They think that the power of someone's speech can have a negative effect on you. And we find this in the opposite also, though. We have a principle that Chazal tell us, Alti birkas hedyot kala beinecha, that the bruch of a regular person should not be light in your eyes, which is fine, found by, you know, there's a famous story, I don't know exactly what it means, that Rabbi Shmuel, who was the Kohen Gadol, he went into the Kodesh Kodoshim on Yom Kippur, and he heard God saying, Yishmael b'ni barcheni, Yishmael, give me a blessing. What does that mean? God wanted a blessing. What on earth does that mean? But the Gemara says that Alti Birkas Hedyot Kala Beinecha, that even if a regular person, okay, he was a Kohen Gadol, but compared to God, he was very regular. So he said, so we shouldn't say dismiss it when somebody gives us a bracha. That's why you could go to the Gedolim for brachas, or you go to your next door neighbor for a bracha. Okay, maybe the, you know, mystical understanding would be that they have a greater power to bestow brachos, but
they may have a hidden life you know nothing about, too.
Maybe. You have the famous story about the Rugachever. The Rugachever was known for his sharp tongue.
Brilliance
and sharp tongue. So somebody went to him and asked for a bracha. The Rugachever didn't want to give him a bracha. So somebody else was sitting there and said, Rugachever, you're such a holy tzaddik. And the Gemara says, the Alti Birkas Hedyot Kala Beinecha, the bracha of a hedyot should not be light in your eyes. Should not be light in your eyes. So Kal V'Chomer, so all the more so, would your bracha be good for this person? So why do you refuse to give him a bracha? So Rogachev responded, well, why don't you give him a bracha without the Kal V'Chomer? Based on what we think. So it's based on our knowing this from what people tell us. Ne'amar, Nomar Ki Mishor She'a Mitzvah. So according to so the reasoning of the mitzvah might be, that we should not cause damage to others with our mouths, just like we're not allowed to cause damage to others through our actions. That a covenant is made with the lips. That people's speech has a special power to it. That it's a unique power of human beings. And we shouldn't take it lightly. That maybe we can say, according to our perception, that the power of speech is a direct present from God, something that comes down from above. That when God blew the breath of life into Adam, it says, Onklus says, everybody knows the famous Onklus, that's when God gave the human race the power of speech, which is different from all other animals. Even parrots don't, you know, have speech. The power of speech in the same way. They could construct original sentences and use language in the same way. Be'alkein yodanu v'nire tomid ki lefich shivas ha-nefesh adam v'dveikusa b'alyonim k'nefesh ha-tzadikim v'chasidim. So the closer you get to the level of being a holy tzaddik, being a very righteous person and a pious person, so the closer you are to God, and therefore your divine blessing of speech will have more of an effect, that a regular person will have somewhat of an effect, and the holier you are, you have more of an effect. That's the going to Gedolim for Brachas, I guess. So this is something that people who know stuff are going to agree with. Perhaps he's referring to here to more people in the more mystical brand of Judaism. The Efshar Lomar division, I should say, the mystical school of thought within Judaism. The Efshar Lomar Od Ki Ainyan Lahashbis Riv Bein Bnei Adam V'Lios Beinayam Shalom. Now we're going to progress to the more rationalistic reason that God doesn't want us to curse each other because that gets us in the habit of thinking ill about other people and speaking ill about other people. So God wants there to be peace between the whole Jewish people. So therefore, we're not allowed to do it. Even though you think maybe you're going to curse someone and they're not going to hear and they're never going to find out, you never know who's listening and you never know. You might repeat it and then somebody will hear it and then repeat it to the object of the curse and that's no good. And then that's going to cause tremendous strife between you people. The Rambam zichrono livracha. The Rambam says, the Rambam is a super rationalist, obviously. That the Rambam, perhaps, with his very rational understanding of things, says, no, there is no power. If you curse someone, there is no power that you can actually cause something bad to happen to that person. But the reason that the Torah prohibited this is because if you go around cursing people, it's bad for your soul and your character traits. That you're going to take revenge more easily, you're going to get angry more easily. He went at length in the Sefer Mitzvot. I think, from his words, that's why he said, so he doesn't think that that anybody's going to get hurt by just being cursed. So he shouldn't develop bad character traits. Is really just so the Torah is looking out for the person who's saying the curse as opposed to receiving the curse. The Chol Divrei Rabbeinu Nekabel, we accept the words of the Rambam. However, he says, the Rambam's a little too ultra super rationalistic for me. I accept his reasoning as well, but my heart is more drawn to what I said before, because I really like to believe that the power of speech has more of a metaphysical, supernatural aspect to it as well.